It's an honor to welcome back to the program Rob Boston. He is a senior policy analyst at Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, online at AU.org. Rob, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Coy. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to it. I want to go back to the 10th anniversary of 9/11. We had a wonderful commemoration ceremony here in Charlottesville that brought people together from really all across the state. People came into town to remind ourselves about community, to thank those who serve on the front lines, helping people every day in our communities, and to remember those that we lost. You wrote a beautiful commentary recently about how we remember those and how we honor those that we lost on that day. Tell us about it.
Yes. Well, the point I was trying to make was that we don't honor the memory of those we lost by taking away our freedoms or using 9/11 as an excuse to attack others. I've been concerned about some of the things I've seen lately, especially some of the attempts to take away the religious liberty rights of Islamic groups and Muslims, attempts to stop them from even building or opening houses of worship in some parts of the country. I just don't believe that we are going to respect anybody's memory by trashing our Constitution. So I try to remind people the importance of our constitutional rights, and the answer when we're confronted with things like this is not to let those rights slip away, but to hold on to them all the more tightly.
And, of course, one of the challenges, and we talk about this all the time with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, which is here in Charlottesville, and John is a good friend. And I was actually with him this morning, and he was saying, you know, that one of the great challenges when it comes to preserving our liberties in America, the problem is that we're not really taught about what those freedoms are. I mean, the extent to which the Constitution, and specifically the Bill of Rights, is taught in schools today it's not enough. Let me just put it that way. In my opinion, it's not really enough.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I know John Whitehead too, and I think he makes a very good point there. There are some polling data where people are asked about the First Amendment and what it contains, or even the Constitution and what it may say or may not say, and the results oftentimes really are shocking. And when you think about this, it's not like the Constitution is some big secret. It's online. If you get a copy, you can read it. You can see what's in it. We do need to do a better job of that in our schools, definitely.
Yeah. We're talking with Rob Boston. You can read his work online. Check out the blog, The Wall of Separation, at blog.au.org. Rob, you also wrote recently, Pulpits Aflame with Politics. And you and I have spoken about this before. And I honestly feel, again, speaking for no one but myself here, I honestly feel that this is indeed a subject that doesn't get enough attention in America today, and that's the politicization of the pulpit. What are your thoughts on this?
Yes, well, this is going to be a big issue right up until the election next year, because there are organizations out there urging pastors to be blatantly political from the pulpit. Now, when I say that, I don't mean just talking about issues, which is permitted, but actually telling people who they should vote for, who they should vote against. There are laws in this country that govern nonprofit organizations, and as a condition of getting tax-exempt status, all nonprofits are prohibited from endorsing or opposing candidates. Now, that isn't just the religious groups. All the nonprofits must abide by that. Americans United, where I work, is a nonprofit. We have to follow that rule, too. If you want to be political, if you want to tell people who they should vote for, who they should vote against, there are ways to do that. There are other types of organizations you can form. But some of these pastors, they want to be very political, yet not bear any of the consequences of that.
So, of course, there's a long history of religious groups being involved in politics in America. And the first thing that comes to my mind is the civil rights movement. I mean, you saw preachers and priests walking arm in arm with people from every faith and in all stripes walking in the streets with people of color, trying to get America to wake up and do what is right and change the laws in this country. And they were successful. And, of course, though there was a backlash that followed from the church, the faithful on the right, on the opposite side of the political aisle that objected to that and ramped up their efforts in the 70s and 80s.
Right, and you still see that today. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about issues in churches, and that comes from the left and the right. And no one's really trying to stop that. But there has long been an understanding that we draw the line at actually encouraging people to vote for or against a specific candidate. And actually, there's some interesting polling data about that, that people are very concerned. They very much oppose that idea. And I think part of it is not so much that people are thinking about any laws that may exist, but it just strikes them as kind of arrogant that the pastor would take it upon him or herself to actually tell you how you ought to vote. People feel that that's their decision to make. That's a private thing, and they don't really want a religious leader telling them, well, if you don't vote this way, you're a bad Presbyterian, or you're a bad Methodist, or whatever folks might say. It's just not something that people support.
Now, we're talking with Rob Boston of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. It's AU.org. When you look at the GOP field, what are your thoughts about the representation of that religious base that we see among some of the candidates?
I'm really kind of tired of what I see as a lot of pandering. It just seems as if it's gotten to the point where it's difficult to even gauge the sincerity of some of these candidates. Rick Perry, for example, was at Liberty University recently. He gave a speech, and he really sort of just talked about how, well, his grades weren't very good in college, and he didn't do very well, and then he went on this extended discussion about religion and faith and all this sort of thing. And maybe he means it. I'm not one to doubt the man's sincerity, but it does feel sometimes as if some of these candidates are just trying to do whatever they have to or say whatever they have to mobilize a certain segment of the GOP base, which is a very conservative Christian base. And then when they get in office, of course, they forget all about the religiosity or all the talk that they gave about faith. So people should, on all sides of the political spectrum, I think, should be very wary about candidates that just wear their religion on their sleeve. A lot of times that's just about getting votes. And in my humble opinion, that's really what it's about.
But there really seems to be, though, in some of their politics. I'm thinking of Michelle Bachmann in that terrific New Yorker article that I finally got around to reading about. Her background is really, she has been, some of these folks have been absolutely marinated in a very very right wing what for me personally is an extremist religiosity that has its vision as this one particular flavor of the Christian church taking control of government.
Yes, there definitely is some of that out there, and you're seeing that manifested in some of the candidates like Bachmann and some others. There is this movement right now that's gaining strength in some of the conservative Christian communities of dominionism. And we've been hearing that phrase lately. And some people in the media are attempting to just sort of shrug it off and say, oh, it's no big deal. It's liberals being paranoid. But there is a strain of this thinking that because these folks believe that their particular interpretation of Christianity is true, the next logical step for them is to have the control of the government and to constitute what they would consider to be a Christian government. And I would submit that, of course, is entirely at odds with our Constitution, which recognizes no official religion and states that everyone should have the right to worship as they see fit.
We're talking with Rob Boston of Americans United. Rob, before I let you go, we've spoken about this before, but take a moment to remind us then, picking up where you just left off, there are folks who would argue that America is in fact a Christian nation. It was founded on Christian principles, that the Constitution is all about establishing a Christian country.
Right. Yeah. It's funny you should mention that because just this past Friday, I was in Wichita, Kansas, where I gave a speech, and the topic of my speech was the Christian nation myth. And I sort of systematically went through and demolished that, like to think I demolished that concept. The 30-second version of that is, if that were the intent of the founders, if that had been the intent of the framers, it would say that very prominently in the Constitution. It would enshrine a preference toward Christianity. Not only does it not say that, First Amendment says there will be no establishment of religion and protects everybody's freedom of religion. So it's just not something that is in our document or is intended for this nation.
And in fact, most of these guys who were at the table and having these conversations were deists and not really Christians. I mean, deists in almost a Eastern Buddhist sense that, yeah, there's a higher power, but it's not really a personal, they never really thought of it as a personal God.
Yeah, you really need to look at the political and the religious thought of the framers to really get a handle on this issue. The political thought was very much opposed to the idea of having a combination of church and state because they had seen the problems that created in Europe and in some of the colonies on these shores. The religious thought comes in when you look at what many of the framers believe personally, and you're right, it was very much a deistic God who sort of put things into motion and then stepped back a little bit from it. Certainly not Orthodox Christianity. I mean, there were, people who were Orthodox Christians back then, but many of the prominent framers had this view of a deistic God that's not really popular today, but was a much more common way of thinking about religion at that time.
Rob Boston is a senior policy analyst at Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You can learn more online at au.org. Rob, it's always great to have you on the program. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Coy.